for Fight Scene with F16, where we talk to legendary fighters and trainers across Australasia. They share some of their wisdom, experiences and stories about being in the fight game. Today, I'm honored to have our guest Mark Pease, founder and trainer at Strikeforce Gym on the Gold Coast, first Muay Thai gym in Australia, our longest serving Muay Thai gym. Mark's been around the game for up to 40 years. So it's going to have a lot of interesting stuff for us to hear. What have you been up to?
Mate, just training, and that's really about all I do at the moment. It's sort of, in the last few years, it's sort of kicked some more goals again. After COVID, everything sort of opened right up, and we're getting chances in like Russia just recently, Japan, America, so flying all over the world. So been very, very busy.
Yeah, right.
And as you've probably seen, we've probably got some of the, I've been lucky because I've got some of the best fighters, I would say Australia, but some of the guys in their weight division is the best in the world. Been very lucky.
Awesome. Start off with, my history with you guys. That started when I moved up from Victoria to the Gold Coast in 93.
Is that your...
Yeah, 1993. Yeah. And I was out the back of Narang and I seen a poster down at Mermaid Beach, and I came down there and trained down there, the little beach shack gym down there. Anyway, because I live closer to Southport, and I met another trainer and ended up going over and training over there. I was doing a bit of math, so that's like 35, maybe even, you might have even had the gym for like 40 years, Mark.
In 88, it'll be 40 years. I still look 21, man. I've got a filter on here, though. Don't worry, it's a filter. No, it's a long time. You know, as I said, it just goes so quick, Shane. You probably realize that as well.
So where did it all start for you, Mark? So let's go even, I came through the Zendo Kai as well, and yourself came through Zendo Kai Karate, so is that where it all started for you, the martial arts?
Yeah, I'm from Melbourne originally. When I was in high school, I lived in a place called Croydon. So I was in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne, and Kenpo Karate started in the local high school up there. And we started going up there, me and a couple of mates, for a while. And then Zendo Kai moved down a little bit further down the road with a very famous instructor by the name of Richard Norton. Hey, everybody. He was doing bodyguard work for big bands Fleetwood Mac and Linda Ronstadt. So really famous 70s and 80s. Most people won't know who we're talking about there, but they were really big bands in the 70s and 80s, and he was their security. So we all went down there and started training down there, and then moved up to Queensland and continued my Zendo Kai path at Mermaid Beach. And then I was in Zendo Kai for quite a while, so probably a good 10, 11 years. So we went with my instructor at the time, Pete Nielsen, and we went and watched a kickboxing, but it was above the waist kickboxing, and it was Tony Quinn versus Gary Pedersen. Now, both those guys were pretty famous blokes back in the day. And Gary Patterson, real famous. And it was.
Is he heavyweights?
I'm pretty sure they're middleweights at that stage. I think they're probably heavyweights now. We're watching this match, and it was next level. The intensity of being in the ring, and these guys just going hammer and tongs in each other. And I looked at him and I said, I want to do this. He says, I can't teach you this. So that's where my thought pattern was, I've got to try and get something a little bit different. At this time, Stephen Roston was training with me karate. He was only, I think he was about 14 at the time, young kid. So he was training, and then a couple of others came on as well. And I said, look, one night a week, we'll just do our own stuff. And so we hooked up at, I think it was Miami High School. We hired a room out. We took kick shields down, and we started throwing punches and kicks, trying to make it emulate more on a kickboxing. And to be honest, man, we had no idea, realistically. we knew how, you know, I was a black belt, Stephen was a junior black belt, and we knew we could sort of kick and punch, but there was no real footwork patterns and all that sort of stuff. And I could see, like, when the boxers got in close to the kickboxers, they could really do a lot more damage. They had better footwork and stuff. And then I was pretty lucky because the guy by the name of Mark Simpson, Pommy, I called him. He was from WA, but he was also a, not a Pommy, I think he was an English boxing champion, amateur. So he had really good hands, and he got a cut across on the path across from WA. And when he started coming, he said, oh, would my worth me the bloke a bit? I said, all right. Well, I said, I'll do you a deal. I'll show you how to kick. You show us footwork and hands. And then it sort of took, because back then, I think the only thing we could do, I'm not sure if you remember, that they had mat systems. So guys like Dominic Delaney, Stephen Vick, all that, and Ian Jacobs used to do them as well. They'd have a team of five people, but one had to be a girl. And they'd, you know, be on the mats and be like open sparring. We didn't do too bad at that, but the ring scenario was going quite well at the stage. So we decided then that, you know, we wanted to do the ring sport more so than the on the mat sport. So we copped a couple of losses at first off, but then once we started to understand the hands a little bit better and the footwork and how to move out of the pocket rather than staying there and getting bashed, we started doing quite well, especially Stephen. Stephen did really, really well. You know, as you know, like he was first Australian to beat the Thai in Australia at the time. And he was only a school kid at the time too. Like he was, I think he was 16 when he beat this Thai. So he was no slap. Yeah. But he was just, he had good basics, but he was just so strong, you know, and he didn't know when to either go down or stay down. And that's how that all started, man. That's grassroots of it. I was an average, probably slightly above average. I was never really that good because I wasn't trained. I was trained by myself and my mates in the gym. But from my mistakes, I passed down to Hakam, you can't do that. That's going to get hurt. You're going to have to start learning this way. So, and I realized probably in about, I think it was about 97, 98 or somewhere around there. We went to Thailand for about the third time. Man, I'm getting better results with my fighters than I am with me. I feel I'm going to be better as a coach. So I knew then, you know, if I had been greedy, I could have stayed there and done it myself. And probably who knows what may have happened, but I felt then it was guys like Stephen Roston, Pixie was coming through, Danny Dedowski was there, Aaron Warren. I'm thinking, hang on, these guys are getting me fights. We're going interstate, you know, and now we're getting asked to go overseas. You know, why would I want to hold them back for the sake of me trying to maybe get a trophy, a little bigger trophy, or fighting another country? So it was a pretty good decision, I feel, to step as a coach and then just take it on board and, you know, forget my training and just train with them.
To others. Tell us a bit about your childhood, like growing up. What made you? You touched on it before, but what got you into martial arts?
Okay, well, my dad grew up in Melbourne in the outer suburbs towards Dandenong there, so it was a little bit sort of country, but the end of the line of most railway stations, Croydon. But my dad trained with Tino Cibrano in Gojikai. And I was sort of always interested because of what he was doing. I got two brothers and they were, you know, like we had a good childhood like that. I mean, didn't have PlayStations back then. You didn't have mobile phones. You had one TV with four channels. So you stayed out till the lights came on in the street, then you had to go home. That was your calling card or so on, as you probably know, you know. So we had a really good childhood down there. Bikes, had good friends, we had motorbikes and all that sort of stuff as well. So there was I didn't have any real bad element towards it. My brothers started getting into a little bit gang-orientated stuff with it back then. And then my parents decided they're going to move up to Queensland. So before it sort of got hold of him a little bit more, we moved up here into Queensland. So I think that was all nullified straight away. So we went from suburbs of Melbourne to being four houses back from a surf beach at Mermaid Beach. So, and why would you want to do anything else? And no, that was good, really good.
It's funny, like the Gold Coast, you know, such a beautiful place, and you got the beach and like the surf lifestyle is such a big thing here. But, you know, like the Muay Thai and the kickboxing, it's such a, like when you get into it, you know, like we had, like us, you know, on the Gold Coast, we had all this beautiful beach and stuff, and we want to go and smash ourselves and, and train in the gym, you know, like 6 days a week. It's like, all right, but that's sort of the way it is, eh?
Yeah.
Do you think your upbringing or other personal experiences in your life shaped your approach to the sport?
I had a pretty bad car accident when I was 18 and went under a truck, came out and broke the L4 and L5, compacted those quite badly, broke my hip, broke my foot, broke my chest bone, ruptured my spleen, broke top and bottom jaw. And I was in hospital for quite a while. And then ended up moving up, you know, back to rehabilitation. And back then, rehabilitation was you go to a physio once or twice a week. And they were all of them said, you know, 14 days are done. You won't be able to, you have to learn how to walk again properly. You're never going to do sport again and things like that. Yeah. And as soon as you get told something like that, you know, you're not going to be able to do this ever again. So I couldn't play football. So I played soccer up here. And played football. And then virtually as soon as I could walk, I was back. Don't get me wrong, I still get bad back pain from time to time. But you know, when I got told that I couldn't do anything, I was determined to show that I could because, you know,
yeah,
I've seen too many people, and you probably would have seen this as well. They get told, okay, that's it. That's it. It's over. Okay, so you're sitting in the chair for the rest of your life. Why not give it a shot? Yeah. Give it a crack. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, it's my life. If I can't sort of do anything with it, I would be very, very disappointed. So I think that sort of helped shape the fighting side of things. I mean, I always really enjoyed the martial arts. Look, as I said, I still enjoy the karate side of things. And, you know, I put a quote up on my board yesterday, in total chaos, there's always an opportunity. So look for that opportunity, Sun Tzu, martial arts thing. So I put that quote up on the board because I believe that, you know. So all these things sort of, I do believe that sort of currents and sort of help keep me grounded towards what I really, really wanted to do. And that's what I wanted to pursue. And then and being told that I couldn't do it, I was more determined to do it and prove people wrong. So, and I think I've done that now. So pretty happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, you know, like you've been around, you know, like before I was around and I've come and gone in the sports many times and you've been consistent, you know, and, you know, when you made that decision, like to think about other people and start training the other ones coming through, like it's not easy. Like I've come back into it sort of as a trainer now, and there's a lot to being a trainer. Hey, you know, it's mate, like
I could talk about being a trainer for days, man. Like in the early days, it was still what I learned in Thailand. I'd bring back and implement that. I'd watch videos. You did as well, man. I know we everybody did. We watched videos, read books, we studied other people. And back then, from probably, not, I know, the early 90s through to the early 2000s, it was probably the way that you could do things like that. And then social media got on board a little bit, you know, with Facebook and MySpace back then. So back in the early days, I found it quite easy to train fighters. But then, and like probably in the last, I don't know, 10 to 12 years, it got a lot harder. Like I've done a Cert 3 and 4 in fitness, Cert 3 and 4 in sports coaching. I had a gentleman tell me, he goes, PC, he said, if you ever want to do a Bachelor of Sports Coaching with Sporting Psychology as one of your majors, he said, I can get you in. I thought, I've come down with you, mate. It's nothing going to do that. And then I had one of my fighters, and he's having a good fight, and he was fighting Frank Georgie, right? Yeah, he was doing, my boy was doing really, really good with Frank Georgie. And then, it was Evan Morris.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was doing really, really good. And then in the fourth round, he must have got hit and he just virtually stopped and let Frankie continue hitting him. I'm thinking, hang on, you'll do it. And he's come back at the end of that round and I give him a verbal spraying. Tom, let's go. What are you doing? Back then you could do that. And then in the fifth round, he virtually just stopped and let Frankie sort of do what he did. And at the end of the fight, he's come to me and goes, why would I continue to fight? You know, he said, I've got belted by him. I come back to the corner, I get belted by you verbally. And I thought, hang on. Things have got to change. So I decided to go and do, believe it or not, I went and did Bachelor of Sports Coaching at the University of Queensland. and to understand more about the modern athletes, because they're athletes, man. You know, I'm a professional coach. A lot of these guys are professional athletes, and some of them do it full time. So I have to be accountable to all these people. So with the psychology sort of thing, I learned things, man, that I'd never even knew existed about.
Yeah.
About not only myself, but other people as well, and how to get through to other people, you know.
Yeah, that's something I, you know, since I've been training a few guys and coming back in the sport, like holding my tongue, like not yelling out, like I always remember you, Mark, like at the fight shows, you'd be banging on the mat.
Yeah.
What the?
Yeah.
It's like I'd crack up laughing, eh?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, it's me, it's the one got.
Yeah. Well, you got to understand, you got to know who to hug and who to slap. So I had to do a questionnaire for all my fighters and give it to them. And that's just asking certain questions so I know a little bit more about them, how they like to have instructions delivered to them in the corner, no matter what the situation being. You know, a lot of them said to me, if it needs to be assertive and hard, give it to me. But then there was a couple that said, no, like clear and concise and controlled. Yeah, I don't like yelling. Do you know what I mean? I don't like complications. Yeah. I had to understand that so to get the best out of the fighter and the athletes, you know? So I believe it's worked. And I think now a lot of people are now starting to do things like that as a coach, because there's no real criteria to be a Muay Thai coach. You know, you can have one fight, go and open up your own gym and train people. And if you've got a good marketing package, people might believe, oh, this is the real deal, you know? So, unfortunately, there is no criteria, but I believe that the quality will always overrun the quantity in the end.
Yeah.